While they waited for the fire to subside, Taita and Fenn sat with Kalulu on the bluff above the gorge, looking across at the Temple of Eos on the far side. They sheltered from the sun under a small ruined pavilion that stood on the spot. The bodyguards had repaired the roof thatch. While the river still ran and my tribe lived here, I was in the habit of coming to this place during the hot season of the year when all the earth groans under the lash of the sun, Kalulu explained. You can feel how the breeze comes off the lake. Furthermore, I was fascinated by the activity of the strangers in the temple across the river. I used this as a lookout from where I could spy upon them. He pointed at the temple sitting high on the opposite bluff. You must visualize the scene at that time. Where the wall of red stone now stands, there was a deep gorge with a series of rapids and cascades down which descended such a volume of water that the senses were numbed by the thunder of their fall. A tall cloud of spray towered above them. He lifted his arms high and described the hovering cloud with an eloquent, graceful gesture. When the wind shifted, the spray blew over us here, as cool and blessed as rain. He smiled with pleasure at the thought. Thus, from here, I had the view of a vulture over all the momentous occurrences of that time. You watched the temple being constructed? Fenn asked. Did you know that there is much ivory and many precious stones within its precincts? Indeed, my pretty child. I watched the strangers bring them in. They used hundreds of slaves as beasts of burden. From which direction did they arrive? Taita asked. They came from the west, Kalula pointed into the hazy blue distance. "'What country lies out there?' Taita asked. "'The dwarf did not answer immediately. "'He was silent for a while, and then he responded hesitantly. "'When I was a young man and my legs were whole and strong, I travelled there. "'I went in search of wisdom and learning, "'for I had heard of a wondrous sage who lived in that far country to the west. "'What did you discover? "'I beheld mountains.' Mighty mountains, hidden for most of the year by masses of dense cloud. When it parted, it revealed peaks that climbed to the very skies, peaks whose bald heads were shining white. Did you climb to the summits? No. I saw them only from a great distance. Do these mountains have a name? The people who live within sight of them call them the Mountains of the Moon, for their tops are as bright as the full moon. "'Tell me, my learned and revered friend, did you see any other wonders on these travels?' "'The wonders were many and legion,' Kalula replied. "'I saw rivers that burst from the earth and boiled with steam, as though from a seething cauldron. "'I heard the hills groan and felt them shake beneath my feet, as though some monster stirred in his deep cavern. "'The memories illuminated his dark eyes. "'There was such power in this range of mountains,' that one of the peaks burned and smoked like a gigantic furnace. "'A burning mountain!' Taita exclaimed. "'You saw a peak that belched fire and smoke. You discovered a volcano!' "'If that is what you call such a miracle,' the little man acceded, "'the tribes that lived within sight of it called it the Tower of Light. "'It was a sight that filled me with awe. "'Did you ever find the famous sage for whom you went in search? "'No.' The men who built this temple came from the Mountains of the Moon. Is that what you believe? Taita brought him back to the original question. Who knows? Not I. But they came from that direction. They labored for 20 months. First they carried in the building materials with their slaves. Then they erected the walls and covered them with timbers and thatch. My tribe provided food for them in exchange for beads, cloth, and metal tools. We did not understand the purpose of that building, but it seemed harmless and posed no threat to us. Kalula shook his head at the memory of their naivety. I was interested in the work. I tried to ingratiate myself with the builders and learn more about what they were doing, but they turned me away in a most hostile manner. They placed guards around their camp, and I could not get close. I was forced to watch their works from this vantage point. Kalula lapsed into silence. Taita encouraged him with another question. What happened after the temple was completed? The builders and slaves departed. They marched back into the west, the way they had come. They left 9 priests to serve in the temple. Only 9? Taita asked. Yes. I became familiar with the appearance of every one of them, at this distance, of course. What makes you believe they were priests? They wore religious habits, red in colour. They conducted rituals of devotion. They made sacrifices and burnt offerings. Describe the rituals. Taita was listening with great attention. Every detail may be important. At noon every day, three of the priests descended in procession to the head of the cataract. They drew water in pitchers and carried it to the temple, dancing and exulting in some strange dialect. "Not the Ten Mass?" Taita demanded. "No, Magus, I did not recognize it." "That is all that happened? Or do you remember anything else? You spoke of sacrifices." "They brought black goats and black fowls from us. They were very particular about the colour. They had to be pure black. They took them into the temple. I heard singing, and afterwards I saw smoke and smelt burnt flesh." "What else?" Taita insisted. Kalula thought for a moment. "One of the priests died. I do not know why. The other eight carried his body to the lakeside. They laid it naked on the sand. Then they retreated up the slope of the bluff. From there they watched as the crocodiles came out of the lake and dragged it under the waters." The dwarf made a gesture of finality. "Within weeks another priest arrived at the temple." "Coming from the west again?" Taita hazarded. "I know not, for I did not see him arrive. One evening there were eight, the next morning there were nine once more." "So the number of priests was significant." "Nine. The cipher of the lie." Taita mused for a while, then asked, "What happened after that?" "For more than 2 years the routine of the priests was maintained. Then I was aware that something of consequence was about to take place. They lit five beacon fires around the temple and kept them burning day and night for many months."
"Five fires," Taita said. "At what positions did they set them?"
"There were five stelae built in the outer wall." "Did you remark them?" Kalula asked. "Yes. They form the points of a great pentagram, the mystical design over which the temple stands." "I have never been inside the temple. I know nothing of any pentagram. I know only that the fires were placed in the five points around the outer wall," Kalulu told them. "Was that all that occurred which was untoward?" "Then another person joined the Brotherhood."
"Another priest?"
"I think not. This person was clad in black, not red. An airy black veil covered the features, so I was unable to tell with any certainty if it was male or female. However, from the shape of the figure beneath the robes and the grace of its movement, I thought it might be a woman. She emerged from the temple each morning at sunrise. She prayed before each of the five fires, then returned to the temple precincts."
"Did you ever see her face?"
"She was always veiled. She moved with an ethereal, haunting grace. The other priests treated her with the greatest reverence, prostrating themselves before her. She must have been the high priestess of their sect."
"Did you observe any significant signs in the heavens or in nature while she inhabited the temple?"
"Indeed, Magus, there were many strange celestial signs. On the day I first saw her pray at the temple fires, the evening star reversed its track through the skies. Shortly thereafter, another insignificant and unnamed star swelled up into monstrous proportion and was consumed by flames. During all her tenure in the temple, strange lights of many colours danced in the northern night sky. All these omens flew in the face of nature."
"Do you believe they were the works of the veiled woman?"
"I say only that they occurred when she arrived. It may have been mere happenstance, I do not know."
"Was that all?" Taita asked.
Kalulu shook his head firmly. "There was more. Nature seemed plunged into turmoil. Our crops in the field turned yellow and withered. The cattle aborted their calves. The paramount chief of our tribe was bitten by a snake and died almost at once. His senior wife gave birth to a son with two heads."
"Dire omens." Taita looked grave.
"There was worse to follow. The weather was disturbed. A mighty wind blew through our town on the hill and ripped off the roofs. A fire destroyed the tribal totem hut and consumed the relics and jujus of our ancestors. Hyenas dug up the corpse of the paramount chief and devoured it."
"This was a direct onslaught on your people, your ancestors, and your religion," Taita murmured. Then the earth moved and shook itself like a living beast under our feet. The waters of the lake leapt into the air, boiling white and furious. The fish shoals disappeared. The lake birds flew away towards the west. The waves crushed our canoes where they lay upon the beaches. They ripped out our fishing nets. The people begged me to intercede with the angry gods of our tribe.
What could you do in the face of the elements? Taita wondered. They had set you a daunting task.
I came to this place where we now sit. I cast a spell, the most potent in my power. I evoked the shades of our ancestors to placate the gods of the lake. But they were deaf to my pleas, and blind to the suffering of my tribe. They took these hills on which we sit as a bull elephant shakes a ngong nut tree. The earth danced so that men could not stand upright. Deep cracks opened like the jaws of hungry lions, and swallowed men and women with their infants strapped upon their backs.
By now Kalulu was weeping. His tears dripped from his chin onto his naked chest. One of his bodyguards wiped them away with a linen cloth.
While I watched, the waters of the lake began to roll and thunder upon the beaches with increasing fury. They leapt halfway up the cliff below us. The spray burst over me in torrents. I was blinded and deafened. I looked across at the temple. Through the clouds and the spray, I saw the black-robed figure standing alone before the gateway. She had her arms held out towards the tumultuous lake, like a wife welcoming the return of her beloved husband from the wars.
Kalula panted for breath and struggled to control his body. His arms jerked and danced, his head shook like that of a man with a palsy, his features convulsed as though he were in a fit.
"Peace!" Taita laid a hand on his head, and slowly the dwarf calmed and relaxed, but the tears still poured down his face.
"You need not continue if this is too painful.
I must tell you. Only you will understand."
He took a gulp of air, then gabbled on. The waters opened and the dark masses pushed through the waves. "At first I thought there were living monsters from the depths." He pointed at the nearest island.
"There was no island. The lake waters were open and empty. Then that mass of rock pushed through the surface. The island you look upon now was born like an infant squeezed from the womb of the lake." His hand trembled wildly as he pointed at it. "But that was not the end. Once again the waters were riven asunder. Another great mass of rock rose up from the bottom of the lake. That is it. The red stones. They were glowing like metal from the flames of the forge. The waters hissed and turned to steam as they were pushed aside. The stones were half molten, hardening as they emerged from the depths into the air. The clouds of steam they generated were so dense as to obscure almost everything. But when they parted, I saw that the temple was untouched. Every stone of the walls was in place, the roof firm. But the black-robed figure had disappeared. The priests also had gone. I never saw any of them again. The red stones kept swelling like a gigantic pregnant belly, until they were the size and shape they are now, sealing off the mouth of the Nile. The river shriveled to nothing, while the rocks and sandbanks in its bed appeared from beneath the waters.
Kalulu gesticulated to his bodyguards. One ran forward to support his head, while another held a gourd to his lips. He swallowed noisily. The liquid had a pungent smell and seemed to calm him at once. He pushed aside the gourd and went on talking to Taita.
"I was so overcome by these cataclysmic events that I ran from this hut down the slope of the bluff." He pointed out the route he had taken. "I was level with that clump of trees when the ground split and I was hurled into the deep trench that opened in front of me. I tried to claw my way out, but one of my legs was broken. I had almost reached the top when, like the jaws of a man-eating monster, the earth closed on me as swiftly as it had opened. Both my legs were caught, the bones crushed to fragments. I lay there for 2 days before survivors from Tamafupa found me. They tried to free me, but my legs were trapped between two slabs of rock. I asked them to bring me a knife and an axe. While they held me, I cut off my legs and bound up the stumps with bark cloth. And when my tribe fled from this accursed place into the marshes of Kyoga, they carried me with them."
"You have lived again through all the terrible events of those days," Taita told him.
It has tried your strength to the limit. I have been deeply moved by all you have told me. Call your women. Let them carry you back to the safety of Tamafupa, where you must rest.
What will you do, Magus?
Colonel Merrin is ready to quench the heated rock face, to find out if it will shatter. I will assist him.